Hey, and welcome to our second episode of the Tricorder Transmissions. We are your hosts, Jeff Hewlett.
And Craig Cohen.
And I'm curious, last week we left off with you talking about going to see Pacific Rim finally. How'd that go?
Oh, yeah. You know what? It actually went really, really well. I'm glad it is a movie that I saw in theaters. And I'm really, really surprised that going into it, I hadn't really seen too much about it, like mm-hmm. I talked about on last episode. So going to see it was pretty cool. The theater was – it was in one of the smaller theaters at my multiplex, but it was probably 75% full. So there were still people interested
wow.
in seeing it. Yeah.
That's impressive.
And I got to say, you know what? I really, really enjoyed it, and I'm glad I saw it on the big screen. You know, it's monsters fighting big robots, but at the same time, there's some cool character moments in it. Mm-hmm. And, you know what? It felt like a good summer movie. I mean, it definitely hit all the beats that a summer movie would hit. But it had a little bit of heart too. So, I really enjoyed it. And I look forward to watching it again, I guess, when it comes out on Blu-ray.
Oh, cool. So you say it was definitely a good popcorn flick.
Yeah. And I think while it's still out in theaters, if people are on the fence, definitely go check it out because, I think it'll meet your expectations.
Oh, all right, cool. Well, I'll take that under advisement if, we have some matinee money to blow tomorrow morning or Sunday.
Yeah.
Perhaps we'll give that movie a spin. But another thing I wanted to bring up movie-wise is I saw a very sad tweet from you earlier about having missed RIPD in the theater, so which I share that sentiment because I really wanted to see it, and then I kind of succumbed to the negativity that was going on out there, and I opted not to see it, and I kind of regret it.
Yeah. You know, it was one of those things where, you know, in the summer – you know, with movies coming out the way they are, and, you know, I have a little stockpile of passes to my theater.
Nice.
So, you know, I try and, you know, use those and figure, you know, I might be a couple of weeks behind, you know, everybody else, but eventually I'll see all the movies. And RIPD was one of those movies that I guess it came out, didn't make any money, and the theaters dumped it already. So I snoozed and I lost, and I guess I'll actually have to eventually catch it on Redbox or Netflix.
Yeah, good old Redbox. I tell you, I've that saved me many a time. So.
Yeah, you know, I really enjoy it. You know, when I go to do my weekly shopping, you know, the Stop and Shop I go to, they have one right by the registers. So, you know, if there's ever a movie out that I'm thinking about, I'll check and see if it's in the Redbox or, you know. Sometimes you're just not sure what you're in the mood for, so you go to the Redbox and see what they got. You know, sometimes returning it, you know, you have to make a trip to a 7-Eleven or something that you might be driving by. But I definitely like the concept of the Redbox.
Yeah, me too. But you know, I have the Redbox curse, and my local CVS down the street has one of those really great double Redboxes.
Oh,
so it's awesome because they always seem to have the movies in. So. You know, and I have the iPhone app, so I can go and browse what's in the actual kiosk and rent and then go pick it up.
Yeah.
So, you know, the first time, you know, of course, I picked kiosk A and I rented my movie and I went. Of course, there are people at kiosk A and I couldn't pick up my movie until they were done. And they're dorking around picking movies that it took them at least 5 minutes to get out of there. So I figured, you know, the second time, maybe I'll be smarter and I'll pick kiosk B. Maybe that's the lesser used kiosk. And sure enough, when I get there, the situation is reversed. And there's some yokel at kiosk B, and I'm standing there like an idiot because I can't pick up my rental at kiosk A. You'd think that would be something that they would take into account, that if you have two linked kiosks there, that you could pick up your rental at either one of them.
Yeah, that makes sense. You'd think you'd be able to go to either one, yeah.
Yeah, so I got burned by that several times. But, you know, it's still for $1.20 a pop. I can't complain. I finally got to see my incredible Burt Wonderstone the other day. And, you know, that actually lived up to my expectations. I was glad that I got a chance to see that. It was had a lot of really good laughs in it. You know, I know it's not a real popular film, but I quite enjoyed it.
Yeah, that was one of those ones that it has most of it takes place in Las Vegas, which I know you're also a big fan of Las Vegas. And I love movies that take place in Las Vegas. So that was one thing that really had me interested in seeing it. The only thing I didn't like about Burt Wonderstone was the ending seemed just a little too outrageous for the movie that they made.
Yeah, I can agree with that. I can agree with that. Although I have to say that the ending got the most laughs out of Meg.
Yeah.
When they were throwing, oh, I don't want to ruin it, but when
yeah.
when they were doing the final trick and you saw what they did behind the scenes to make yeah. the trick work, she was laughing so hard her face was beet red. And it was pretty, I had to say, it was pretty funny. It was a little grandiose.
Yeah.
And it seemed a little bit too big, but it was still pretty funny.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Very cool. So do you have anything on tap for this weekend movie-wise? Or
I don't know. I have some stuff going on Sunday, so I might not be able to get to the movies. We may go tomorrow morning. I still want to see Red 2. Not mm-hmm. sure if I'm going to make it to that.
Yeah.
But nothing too major on tap. But I do have a Star Trek thing that happened this week that I can bring into the show.
Oh, nice.
I got my hands on, you know, my affinity for collecting original series action figures. And I got my hands on a Spock and the Horta diorama. So, yeah, it's pretty neat. Spock has some interchangeable heads, so you can change it to the contemplative head or the in pain head, so you can reenact the pain scene from the Devil in the Dark.
Oh, excellent. Hey, you're going to have to put that up with the episode over at the website, tricordertransmissions.com. For those of you who listen over iTunes or through an RSS feed of some kind, if you do go to the tricordertransmissions.com, for certain episodes, we will include relevant pictures. I know mm-hmm. for last week's episode, The Man Trap, we had pictures of us each with the salt monster from the now defunct Star Trek Experience in Las Vegas.
I think it was from our 2008 foray out there. I think that was that was the closing year, wasn't it?
I believe that was the year that they closed shop. Yeah.
Yeah. So we have pictures of ourselves with quite a few of the statues that were there, as well as a couple of the characters who were walking around in costume. So that was a really great send off for that exhibit. I kind of miss it. I was there several times over the years that it was in operation. And you know, it was a little repetitive, but still, you could really connect with Star Trek history there with that little museum. And,
oh, yeah.
You know, did mm-hmm. a great job putting the place together, and the little Quark's restaurant felt almost like you were in a Star Trek episode, you know, other than the fact that the waiters and waitresses didn't really get into the spirit, but that's okay.
Yeah, and I do have a box of matches from Quark's, which if anybody out there ever bumps into me in person, ask me for a book of matches and I will give you one from Quark's.
You gave me a handful as well, which I still have right here in my little office where I'm recording from. I can see them from right where I'm sitting.
Excellent. And I'm sure we will talk about the Star Trek Experience as this show goes on.
Oh, for sure.
But this week, I guess we are talking about Charlie X.
Yeah, we are talking about the episode Charlie X, which was the second episode aired. Mm-hmm. It was originally aired on the 15th of September in 1966. And the remastered version, which is the one we will be watching on Blu-ray, was rebroadcast on July 14th of 2007. So one of the middle area of the remastered broadcasts. And for anybody who hasn't seen it, the quick plot synopsis rundown is the Enterprise takes 17-year-old Charlie Evans aboard for transport after he's spent 14 years alone on a deserted planet, but he's unable to reintegrate with his fellow humans. So what do you think of that one?
Yeah, so this should be a fun one to sit down and watch. And I know it'll be interesting when we get into our essential versus non-essential discussion. Yeah. So I'm looking forward to that. Mm-hmm. And it's funny that I noticed the air date of the 15th of September. We're only about a month behind the actual month and date of the air date. You know, if we had waited maybe 5 weeks to launch this podcast, we would have been in perfect sync.
Yeah, you're true. Another funny thing about this episode is I always, you know, you go on YouTube and you see movies or TV shows that get recut to appear as if they're different movies. So they'll take a drama and turn it into a horror trailer.
Yeah.
Something like that. I always thought this movie this TV show version would be really cool to be recut as like a teenage coming of age. Because it really is. It's a kind of a coming of age in outer space with special powers. But, you know, it could be one of those little touching things with little like light piano background music and poor Charlie having all sorts of bullying problems and stuff.
That is great.
Little gym scene in there.
Yeah, yeah. All right, so this will be our commentary track for Charlie X.
Yep, and we will start the episode in 3, 2, and 1. Welcome to Charlie X. So right at the beginning here, we see the first appearance of another model Federation ship. This is known as the Antares. The ship itself is the Antares, but there's also an Antares type of ship here that appears a couple of other times throughout the series. One other variant is called the Yorkshire. And there was a third ship called the Woden, but that only appeared in this Antares style in the remastered versions of the show. In the original version of the show, it was a clone of the Botany Bay style ship that we see in the Space Seed episode coming up. But in the remastered, they digitally changed it to look like the Antares style model ship. So now
it was almost like bringing it all, like fixing the continuity, if you will.
Right. Yeah. So that way you weren't seeing the Botany Bay, which actually was an older Earth ship. Mm-hmm. So it kind of didn't fit the description.
Yeah.
So it actually had come from a later time period. So they did fix that. So that may be a pain point for some diehard fans, but they Lucasized it a little.
One thing that's worth noting here is Kirk is in his dress uniform. And I guess it was because he was meeting, he's meeting other people from another ship in a formal manner.
Yeah, and these guys are kind of like my parents used to be when they were dropping me off at my grandparents to get rid of me for the weekend. Like, oh yeah, no, we're not gonna, we're not gonna stay. No, we gotta go. We gotta get on the road. Nope, no thanks. Don't want any drinks. We're taking off. Kind of just dumping the kid here. What a great jacket that is, by the way.
Yeah.
Wow.
So they're basically transferring Charlie, this kid Charlie, 17-year-old. 17 or 15?
I think 17. I think 17.
And there he is seeing Yeoman Rand. It's the first time he's seeing a woman. He's been living. He was found on a planet.
The only human on the planet, supposedly. Yeah, so he survived on his own.
From the age of...
From
3 to 5?
No, longer. I think it was a teenager, right? Oh, okay. 14, right?
Yeah.
14, somewhere around there.
Mm-hmm.
So he... he doesn't even know that she's a girl. So the funny thing about... I thought, when I was younger and originally watched the... I thought that Janice herself was older.
Mm-hmm.
But apparently she's only supposed to be in her early 20s in this show. So I thought she looked a little bit old up. So we're getting the
opening titles.
The opening titles here. Getting our Space to Final Frontier monologue.
And the most interesting thing about this episode is how quick those guys were to hand Charlie off. You can tell that they were sort of anxious to get rid of him.
Yeah, they wanted out, baby.
But at the same time, they either had extreme faith in Kirk's ability as a captain and as a person to deal with Charlie, or they just said, hey, this is our opportunity to get rid of this kid.
Oh, man. I'm going with the latter. I'm going with the latter on that one. You could tell those guys were sweating, and they were going out of their way to say nice things about Charlie. Always been an absolute pleasure. Yeah. Get him the hell off our ship.
It almost seems like what they did, though, could be, I don't want to say litigious, but definitely could have had charges brought against them, by Starfleet.
Yeah, a little court-martial action there. They also was a Federation ship, right? Was a Federation ship. So yeah, here we go. Here we see yet another bizarre medical device.
It's like the inverted stair climber.
Yeah. Must have that have been like to build as a set piece?
Mm-hmm.
You got these rectangular blocks coming out of the wall. So they have to have some kind of resistance on them. So it looks...
And there's that medical panel that we saw in... The Man Trap episode.
Yeah, yeah. And, I always wondered what was inside those rose-tinted cases behind McCoy that you see right here. There's bottles of some sort in there. Is that, is that his liquor cabinet?
Is that Bones' stash of interstellar liquor?
Yes.
There might be some books in there, but you know, I definitely think I see a couple of decanters there. Mm-hmm. So here we go. We're
learning that he's completely physically sound.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
We got the background onto you know, how he had been on the planet for 14 years from the age of 3. Once the ship supplies were exhausted, he sort of foraged and found his own. And he learned how to speak via the ship's tapes.
Yeah, pretty impressive. Pretty impressive for a kid. And he's putting the jacket back on, but he looks awful sweaty.
Mm-hmm.
So wonder what's going on here. And he's got a... He's also been given an older style Starfleet uniform here, so presumably from the other ship.
Mm-hmm.
So now he's talking about how the other ship didn't like him.
Yeah.
So now we're starting to get a little confirmation here that the other crew was dumping him off.
Yeah.
Onto the Enterprise, but you know, McCoy's still trying to be nice here.
Yeah. Well, McCoy's saying you know every 17-year-old or any teenager
awkward, right?
is unsure of themselves and they want to be liked.
Yeah, so I think that Charlie has a little too much fascination with this guy lowering the shaft into that hole. I don't know. He seems really interested in this.
Yeah.
He's laying conduit here. What exactly is this guy doing, by the way? I wonder what there's a grate in the floor.
Yeah.
Yeah, see, he looks a little too interested in this. Oh, now he's going to climb down the
Jeffrey's tube?
I was supposed to say, yes. Is that a Jeffrey's tube? Is that, yeah. So now he's going to take a look at what's going on with the, so look at that alternate uniform comes in red and blue.
Yeah,
in
blue.
Yeah. Oh, there's another weird gadget. What's that thing? Obviously it rotates or something. Yeah. And here we see Janice Rand again. And so now we're going to develop a little more of Charlie's infatuation.
Yeah. It's his first
with
crush.
With the Omen Rand. Yeah. Yeah.
And she's having an issue with her tricorder for some reason. And he's all of a sudden, out of nowhere, has her favorite perfume.
Yeah.
Where did it come from? How did he get it?
Very peculiar. Well, getting a little inkling here of something interesting going on with Charlie here. It's a present. So, yeah. So she's questioning where he got it from. But where did we... Yeah. But he doesn't want to give that information up. And she's going to ditch him.
It's interesting that the first two episodes that broadcast and the first two episodes that we talked about, last week's The Man Trap and then Charlie X, they have sort of a similar...
Oh, there was the butt slap, by the way.
He slapped her on the butt and she's...
Oh, and she's in cred.
Instantly admonishes him.
Yep.
And she tells him to ask Kirk what he did wrong.
Yeah. Well, sends him to the man.
Yeah. But basically, these first two episodes that were broadcast have a very similar structure in the sense that there is some kind of menace on board the ship.
Yep.
And I think it's interesting that they decided to go back to back with sort of that plot device, because there would be plenty of times where they would, most of the episode would take off, you know, or take place off the Enterprise or, as part of an away mission. But here, the first two episodes back-to-back dealt with a menace on board.
Yeah, you had more of a Freak of the Week thing going on here. And here we get introduced to an alien, a name of an alien species called the Thassians.
Mm-hmm.
So in the previous episode, The Man Trap, you didn't get any names of aliens. Now we're getting the first name of an alien species. That we're actually going to see near the end of this episode. But they're in Thassian space or near Thassian space. So it makes sense. So, by the way, here's another oddball piece of technology that Kirk has in his hand. So we didn't see that before, but it's the log book that he has to sign off on quite a bit. So we're slowly getting introduced to all of the common pieces of Star Trek technology that we're going to be seeing throughout the series. So quite interesting to see. They're talking about how Charlie couldn't have survived alone.
Yeah, Spock being the skeptic that he is. And he's basing his argument on science. He's saying,
absolutely.
Scientifically,
and science.
There's no way that this kid could have survived for as long as he did.
Yep. And Kirk is actually taking a different stance here and saying, you know what, shut up, guys. You know, he's obviously alive and he needs our help. So he's going to depend on the doctor to make sure Charlie's in good health. The Vulcan lute. We're not ready to go to Eden yet, brothers, but we're going to get a song nonetheless.
So this is kind of cool. It's one of the things I like about this episode is we see the wreck area and everybody's sort of just doing their own things. They're playing cards. You know, Spock's jamming out on his lute. They're playing the tri-level chess. And it's cool to see the, you know, the crew sort of in its downtime.
Yeah, yeah. And there's a little smile from Spock.
Yeah.
Little smile from Spock.
And now we're going to be serenaded by Uhura.
There we go.
She's kind of riffing. She's improvising on, you know, about Spock.
Who's in Satan's guise. Spock looks like Satan. Devil ears and devil eyes. Ooh, that's kind of offensive. Look at the look on Spock's face. And apparently Janice Rand is amused by this. And all are the other crew members. And Spock's playing along nicely. His touch would barbarize. His alien love could victimize. Woo! That's scandalous, man. Wow.
Yeah, but it's all playful, I guess Spock's able to read that.
Oh, sure. Female astronauts, and they call them astronauts too, which is interesting. Female astronauts. Now, in walks Charlie, by the way. You know, I don't think it was advertised back then that Uhura had a singing capability. It was one of her great talents.
Yeah.
Was her ability to sing. It's been used a couple of times and in one of the movies. So here we see Charlie's going to do some card tricks to try to amuse Janice, but he's going to get frustrated because Uhura is taking her attention away from him.
Well, yeah, he sort of doesn't understand socially you're supposed to sort of let people finish. He seems more keen on just interrupting. And here Uhura
is going to rip on Charlie a little bit.
And Charlie's not going to take too well to it.
Yeah, no, he's not going to like that very much.
Seeking
out his first... Now she's embarrassing him by pointing out his crush.
It's a minor form of bullying. It's teasing.
No, I can see how he would get pissed by that. I'd be a little uncomfortable.
Yeah.
People you don't really know. You know, he's calling you out. She's calling you out in front of all these people. You know, he's got no experience with girls.
Mm-hmm.
Poor kid. You know, I can see where he got a little bit miffed here. Mm-hmm. And you can see it in his face is contorting a little bit. And I don't think that Janice is feeling too good about this. And there we see a little manifestation of Charlie's power. Subtle.
And he's going to start doing his card tricks here. Let's talk a little bit about Charlie. It's actor Robert Walker. You're probably going to know him from playing the character of Bobby Hartford in 1972's Beware the Blob.
Hey, a great flick, man. Larry Hagman.
Yes, director.
Now, here's
Larry
a very
Hagman.
Important scene, by the way. Now, Charlie's done a card trick, and now the cards have pictures of Janice Rand on them
in different poses.
So now we're getting some really solid confirmation that Charlie's got some serious powers going on.
Yeah, this is real magic.
This is serious magic.
This isn't sleight of hand.
So Charlie has definitely got some special powers. But anyway, back to Beware the Blob, by the way, which is available in its entirety on YouTube.
Okay.
I will point out, so if anybody out there is interested, I often find that people are unaware that there is a sequel to The Blob.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's a direct sequel, mind you.
Oh, yeah.
So, very, very good to watch. Not a very good movie, but good to watch. Good to watch. The Blob eats hippies.
Yeah, yeah.
It's spectacular. Uh-huh. It's spectacular.
Yeah. And Robert Walker, in addition to Beware the Blob, he did a lot of TV work after Trek. The TV work includes The $6 Million Man, Charlie's Angels.
By the way, this is the one and only mention of Meatloaf in Star Trek. I wanted to point that out since I know Craig is a big fan of Meatloaf. As am I.
Yeah.
Not Meatloaf the singer, but Meatloaf the food.
Yeah. And it serves a purpose here because we're going to see that it's Thanksgiving. Mm-hmm, Kirk says, I don't want the crew eating this synthesized meatloaf. Can you make it taste like turkey? I believe. Isn't that what he says?
Yeah. And then I think, doesn't Charlie actually...
Charlie actually turns him into turkeys.
Yeah. And then the chef is amazed at the fact that there's turkeys. And you know, this is... We also get confirmation here that the ship actually does have a chef.
Yeah.
Right? The guy that does do cooking. Mm-hmm. And there's ovens?
Yeah. But he's using some kind of food replicator technology.
Yeah. So where were you?
I was just finishing off some of the other work that Robert Walker had done. He had done also work on Chips in Dallas and Murder, She Wrote.
Wow. So,
yeah.
He had quite a little career himself there. Mm-hmm. So now we're getting a little bit of Kirk being a role model.
Yeah, I think Kirk was explaining to him why you don't pat women on the behinds.
Butt. Yeah. Legitimate. I think Charlie wasn't raised around women. He doesn't know how to behave. I think it's legit.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Kirk. I gotta hand it to Kirk. Mm-hmm. You know, he doesn't know this guy, and he's really stepping up to try to be like a mentor, a father figure. I think that says a lot about Kirk as a character.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that he really does. He does care. You know, even though he's busy running a starship, he still wants to take the time out to help, you know, a stranger. I mean, here we're getting a communication from the Antares ship.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to find out really soon here how evil Charlie can be when things don't go his way.
Yeah,
sending Spock back to his station there.
He's saying scanning the ship wasn't very reliable.
Yeah, so you think something happened, Charlie doesn't really know, but he does know a little bit, some debris, now we're going to get some confirmation. Some debris. Yeah.
And it's gone.
It's what's left of the Antares.
It's gone the way of Planet Alderaan, if you will, to make a Star Wars connection.
Yep. Yeah, it's a shame. Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's what you get for dumping the kids off at grandma's and running away.
Mm-hmm. The episode was based
There's
on
a meatloaf again, by the way.
Yes.
Now they've turned into real turkeys. Turkey in the ovens.
The story for this episode was written by Gene Roddenberry, and the script itself was written by longtime Star Trek, behind the scenes person DC Fontana. You've got some really interesting pedigree there. Here's the tri-level. Chessboard.
The introduction.
It doesn't really seem like it's played like real chess. They're using terms like check and checkmate, but if you watch it doesn't seem like the moves are the same. But it's kind of cool to see the how chess might advance in the time it takes for us to get to the era that Star Trek's in.
And this was actually made into a game that you can buy and play. Yeah, there is such a thing as the 3D chess that was developed in homage to this. I'm sure you can find it on a website near you.
Mm-hmm.
And here comes Charlie, who seems very interested in the game itself.
Mm-hmm.
And Kirk's going to invite him in to take a look around and learn a little bit about this game.
Mm-hmm. And also, we see here that Spock thinks he's got Kirk beat. And boom, just like Kirk normally does, he blindsides you and is checkmate.
Mm-hmm. So now we see that Kirk used an illogical approach to chess to beat Spock's logical approach to chess. So on an intelligence scale, I think that actually speaks a little bit about Kirk.
Sure.
Knowing how intelligent Spock is, you know, we always assume that Spock is far more intelligent than anybody else in the ship, which is proven many, many times. But Kirk can still match his intelligence in some areas, which is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
So here is Spock's going to teach Charlie a little bit about, and Charlie's going to jump the gun and play without really knowing much about it. A little smirk from Spock there.
Spock makes quick work of him. He spanks him.
And the poor chess set suffers for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, we don't really know too much about Spock yet, and it's the fact that, he doesn't have he's suppressed his emotions, or his race does. So he has no problem beating a kid soundly, whereas sometimes you let the kid win or you prolong it a little bit to make them feel, a little bit better about themselves. But,
a little tantrum here by Charlie, who's a pretty sore loser, and Spock is going to,
and you know what? Himself. Spock's kind of lucky he made his exit when he did.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, seeing some of the things that are coming up here in this episode, you realize that, Spock got off easy here.
And there we go. The eyes roll back.
I wonder that when they did the casting for this episode, was that a requirement of whoever they cast in the Charlie role? He had to be able to make that weird face, because he does it several more times with that weird eye roll and the tucking of the chin to the chest.
Oh, and here Yeoman Rand has she's got a pretty good idea here.
Yeah, she's trying to introduce him to a girl. I mean, and she's a cute one too.
Yeah, it's his own age. And he gives her the quick brush off.
That's not cool, man. Yeah, and she even looks a little bit like Janice here.
Yeah, you know, she was doing him a solid, and unfortunately she wasn't able to.
She was trying to help him out.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the heart wants what the heart wants, huh? Yeah.
It's
the hairdo.
Putting the technical end of this episode to sort of bed, if you will, it was directed by Lawrence Dobkin, who died in 2002. Hmm. He was an American television director, actor, and screenwriter, and his career spanned 7 decades. Wow. One interesting fact about him, from 1971 to 1993, he served as the narrator of the Hall of Presidents show.
Wow.
And he returned to re-record the presidential roll call each time a new U.S. president was re-elected. So if you saw the Hall of Presidents show between 71 and 93, you heard Lawrence Dobkin's voice.
You are a veritable cornucopia of factoids here,
It's amazing how easy it is to find things when you have the internet at your disposal.
Google and Wikipedia are our best friends. What would we do without them? You know what I want to Google? How could you do your hair like Janice Rand in real life? I mean, you would need some sort of an apparatus to wrap your hair around, wouldn't you?
Yeah, you would think so. It almost looks like sort of the hat that Jeannie wears, but made out of hair.
Yeah, really. I mean, I can't see how she would have enough hair physically. I mean, that hair, if you let that all down, it would probably go down to her knees at least.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Because she's got to do all that cross-hatching going on there, and
it's a lot of work.
Yeah, definitely. Well, when she reappears in the future, in some of the Star Trek movies, she has regular hair.
Yeah.
You know, so they obviously did away with those hairdos. They fell out of fashion, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Oh, now she's going to express her concern.
Yeah, she's saying he's got that look that if he's not really, really put in line.
Look at the dramatic lighting on her face there. You know, we're really seeing the emotion in this scene. Yeah. You know, Kirk is concerned.
Yeah. Well, I think as captain of the ship, everybody on board is his responsibility.
Oh, as we hear many, many times in the future, 430 crewmen thereabouts. Mm-hmm. And a little smirk there. He knows Charlie's just trying to get himself a little. So Kirk's not really mad.
Yeah.
You know, he knows what it's like. Mm-hmm. He remembers. You know, good thing there weren't any green chicks on this ship, Charlie wouldn't have been able to control himself, man.
Yeah. I'm actually also surprised that he wasn't more distracted by Nichelle Nichols, who very exotic looking, sexy.
She's a pretty woman, man. Yeah, and if he had never seen a girl before, and then he sees Uhura. I mean, Uhura was dancing, doing a little dance and a little singing. That's quite alluring.
She had some moves.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. Yeah.
And here's Kirk really trying to.
He doesn't want to talk about the birds and the bees, though. He's pointing that off on Dr. McCoy. nice work. He's going to get some. Yeah, okay. Here he's going to explain the fact. And Charlie still thinks it's about the butt slap.
Yeah.
But, you know, to be fair, though, he's really learning all of this stuff for the mm-hmm. first time. And it's nice that Kirk is patient enough to try to help him work through it.
Mm-hmm. And actually, Kirk has a great line in this episode that I don't remember if it's in this scene or not, but he basically says, Charlie, there's a million things in this world you can have and you can't have, and that's it. You know, he's basically saying you have to learn to accept, you know, the things that are, you know, which is kind of funny coming from Kirk, because in terms of accepting things, it kind of shows his philosophy, though, that, you know, you really have to know when. Mm-hmm. You know, you're basically at a dead end, and when you're not.
Well, unless it's a no-win scenario.
Yeah. Well, then
he can't accept that. He can't and won't accept that.
But it's a great line, and I think it's a great moment for Kirk. And this episode is sort of a real showcase for the Kirk character.
Yeah, definitely, and I like how. you see his softer side and the how much he respects the opposite sex.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he shows himself to be very, very open-hearted here.
Mm-hmm. Kirk's explaining that she's too old.
Yeah.
And that when you hit on girls, you know, there it is. There are a million things in the universe you can have, and there are a million things you can't have. It's no fun facing that. That's the way it is. What a great, you know, it's a lesson we all have to learn.
Yeah.
But he's basically saying, you know, you'll know when the girl you're dealing with is gonna, you know, she's feeling what you're.
Yeah, it's a good lesson for him to learn. Yeah. You know, as an adolescent, you know, we all go through that. I remember going through that when I was a kid, and I'm sure that you went through that too. It's a tough lesson, man.
Yeah, yeah.
And you know, I can definitely empathize with Charlie on this one. Mm-hmm. It's tough. Especially when the girl you have a crush on wears a short skirt like that every time you see her.
I know, man. So it looks like the ship is now off course.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not supposed to be.
Here we see another really strange thing. So apparently the Enterprise has an acrobatics and gymnasium.
Yeah.
And Kirk is apparently teaching Charlie how to become a professional wrestler.
Yeah, he's showing him how to take a bump here.
Yeah.
You know?
And telling him how to slap the floor to absorb the fall. And here we have the Star Trek gi. You know, Charlie's got some tights on with a what looks almost like a martial arts gi. And Kirk's showing off his spectacular physique, doing some tuck and rolls.
And Charlie really isn't comfortable. He doesn't want to do that role.
That was like me in gym class. I wasn't comfortable with that stuff when I was that age either, man. I didn't want to be wrestling around.
And Charlie's kind of pissed because Kirk told him he was going to teach him how to fight. Yeah. And Kirk says, well, I'm trying to teach you how to defend yourself first.
This is he's going with the Mr. Miyagi approach. Yeah. You got to learn the wax off and the paint the fence before you can learn.
How to crane kick?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So now we're going to see a little bit of grappling.
Oh, yeah.
Takedown.
Oh. Nothing to it, right? Yeah. Nothing to it. Kirk's going to throw it up. Oh. That's a classic throw right there.
Yeah.
And that could have been disastrous because that mat slid.
Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. Oh, this guy, Sam here. Sam is getting into it.
Sam's amused by it.
Yeah, I'll see.
And Charlie there's no way he could go all day here. Kirk could be distracted making a batch of cookies and he's not going down.
Well, Kirk's not really doing him much of a service in this one. He's just messing with him.
And boom, he shows Charlie where it's at.
Yeah, there's a big problem right here.
Yeah.
Here Sam's we laughing. Go.
Again with the teasing.
Oh boy.
And
there's
boom.
The look.
Bye-bye, Bazinga. Sam.
See you later, bud. And the towel
the
is
The towel
left.
Stayed away.
the towel stayed
behind.
So if you're a towel in this scenario, count yourself lucky. Mm-hmm. Charlie's powerless against towels.
Mm-hmm. And Kirk has sort of an oh shit moment.
He's giving him the stern look.
Yeah.
But now you realize how lucky Spock was.
Exactly. You know, Spock definitely could have been sent to that faraway place.
That begs the question, how does Charlie decide who gets sent away and who gets other consequences?
Yeah.
You know, is it just up to whatever the mood of the day is or whatever he feels like? And
I think it's also, you know, his level of anger as well. I think the moments where he's completely and utterly angry, it's sort of like almost a tribal urge, you know, or a tribal action, you know, instantly banishes that person. And when he's a little bit more controlled, he's able to sort of, you know, take away their ability to smile or some other sinister plots. And here's Charlie is really showing his ability. Phaser's gone.
But just the phaser, not the guy.
Yeah. He's showing his strength here. He may be physically weak. And unable to throw people down. But with his mind, he's able to do a lot.
Here's that dramatic lighting again.
And here's Kirk really talking to him like a dad. And Kirk is showing no fear here. He's showing no fear of Charlie sending him away.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is a huge character moment for Kirk because mm-hmm. it shows that he's got a good understanding of Charlie
mm-hmm.
And knows that Charlie sort of looks up to him in a sense.
Mm-hmm.
And also it shows sort of a level of fearlessness.
Yeah, and he's the captain of the ship. Mm-hmm. I mean, he
acts like it.
He's acting like yeah. his role. I mean, he knows what he has to do. And if he shows fear here in front of those two security guards.
Oh yeah, you might as well just chop his.
Yeah, you might as well chop your command right out.
Yeah,
you're done.
Mm-hmm.
So he has to establish that not just for Charlie, but for those crew members that are subordinate to him. Mm-hmm. But those two guys don't want to take that kid to that quarters, man. He could make them disappear just like that.
Yeah. And all the phasers on the ship are gone.
Every single one of them.
Yeah. So
so now they are defenseless against Charlie. Would the phasers have worked on him, though?
I guess if somebody snuck up behind him.
We don't know. You know what? They probably would.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to spoil the end of the episode here, but they now that I think about it, they probably would have if you could get off a shot where he wasn't paying attention.
Yeah.
So he is human.
Mm-hmm. So now we're learning a little bit about the Thasians in the mm-hmm. sense that they had the ability to control things with their mind.
Mm-hmm.
So Spock had done some research there.
Yeah, we're getting a little inkling of our first real alien species that has some sort of unearthly power. So it's another concept that the viewers hadn't been introduced to yet until this episode.
Mm-hmm. And Spock shows sort of a level of discomfort at the fact that Charlie could be responsible for the destruction of the Antares,
mm-hmm.
basically because it shows a total disregard for human life, which is not good for someone with that kind of power.
Yeah, no, it's dangerous. Definitely dangerous. So they need to figure out what they're going to do with him at this point, mm-hmm. you know. And Spock is also well aware that Charlie looks at Kirk as a mentor, a mm-hmm. father figure. So you know he also will encourage Kirk to use that position to try to keep Charlie in check.
Mm-hmm.
And here's Bones. The struggle must remain between Kirk.
Yeah. So basically,
and Charlie. Yeah.
Spock saying, you know, you've got to be the deflector here or the buffer, mm-hmm, or, mm-hmm. you know. We really can't engage him.
Now Charlie, he's putting Charlie on the spot here, asking mm-hmm. about the Antares.
And Kirk's being stern with him again.
Yeah, he is.
Charlie fesses up to it.
There was a warp baffle plate on the shield mm-hmm. of there, and he made it go away.
And in doing so,
he's claiming it would have blown up anyway. Ah, the truth comes out.
They weren't nice to him.
They wanted to get rid of him. See?
Yeah.
See? Parents everywhere, take note. If your kid has special powers, don't drop him at grandma's.
Yeah.
Because likely on the way to wherever you're going that weekend, your car is going to blow up.
Mm-hmm. And I think as this episode progresses, it does something that Star Trek does so well throughout the entire series, mm-hmm. not just the original series, but also Next Generation and DS9. And, you know, they present a scenario that almost seems unresolvable.
Mm-hmm.
How are they going to resolve this? They have a godlike being on their ship.
She really brought that one home.
Yeah, she sold it.
Yeah, big time.
But that's one of the things I love about Trek is, you know, they create these scenarios where you say, I don't know how this is going to end. You know, how can it end for Charlie?
Yeah.
You know,
well, I don't know. I you know, I'm not, again, I don't want to spoil it, but the resolution of this one, it's a little too convenient.
And here he's playing with Spock now.
Making Spock recite poetry. Quite interesting poetry.
Yeah.
And Charlie's not happy with him changing course.
Yeah.
He wants to get to Colony 5.
Yeah.
Wherever Colony 5 happens to be.
Kirk basically wants to keep him away from populated areas.
Oh, rightly so. Rightly so. And he cut off communications. Yeah. Poor Uhura. Her hands are burned.
Yeah.
Yep, he's making Spock recite more poetry. Mm-hmm. Strangely enough, he's making Spock recite right there. He made him recite classic Earth poetry.
Yeah.
Where does Charlie know that from?
Well, he had the ship's tapes. You don't know what kind of records the ship had. They probably had...
He had enough time to get through all of that?
14 years.
Yeah, I guess. Well, I don't know. Well, I guess it was the... Oh, well, you know. It's the future. Maybe kids in the future. I'm thinking about kids today.
They'll actually appreciate the arts.
Yeah.
Classic literature. I also think that was a really, really good performance by Leonard Nimoy. You know, sort of showing... that he didn't have control of himself.
Oh, boy.
And he turns Tina into an iguana. Boom.
There's that face again.
Yeah.
Yeah, you know, and how did he pick the iguana? I mean.
Yeah.
What, did he just see a picture of it in the record tapes and decided he wanted to turn her into that? I mean, he didn't make her go away. I guess he wanted to torture her for some reason or another.
And speaking of torture, here is Yeoman Rand in sort of her night gear.
Oh, boy. This is going to turn ugly quick.
And Charlie's, you know, he brought her a flower.
Yeah, that's nice of him. But she's not having it, man. Yeah, see? He's not aware of the etiquette, though.
Yeah.
Don't ever...
He's in full-on jealous boyfriend mode here.
Now he's getting creepy, man. Things are getting weird.
Now, unlike Kirk, Yeoman Rand is not able to talk to Charlie this and get away with it.
Uh-oh. And walk into the camera and break time. That was a good commercial cut right there, I think. Yeah. Like, what's going on? So now we're back and we see nothing really happened when it went dark, but she hit the main line to Kirk.
Yeah, so everybody could hear what's going on.
Yep. Turbo lift right to her quarters. And Charlie said the L word. Mm-hmm. Uh-oh.
Oh.
And you see there that Spock hit the wall hard enough to put a dent in
it. Yeah, and there he sends Rand away and can't believe what he did in his rage. And he blames her.
Yep. And it's quite interesting that Spock's legs are supposed to be broken.
Yeah.
You know, both of his legs.
Yeah.
From hitting the wall, I guess.
Yeah.
Was enough to.
But it also shows kind of, it gives a little bit more insight into Spock's pain threshold. Without telling them, or only by telling them, would anybody know that his legs are broken. Whereas I'd imagine if it was me or you.
He's kind of holding his leg there a little bit, sitting a little cockeyed.
Yeah.
And Kirk appears to be hurt as well, but apparently he doesn't have any broken bones.
Yeah.
Or broken Vulcan bones are a little more brittle than human bones, I guess. Spock's got to have some kind of a weakness, huh?
I mean, that was a pretty hard hit they took, and he took the brunt of it because Kirk was in front of him. So he had kind of Kirk's weight on him, too.
Yeah, and here's Kirk.
And here Kirk just saw Rand sent away, and he's still able to sort of address him in that stern manner, that, you know, that fearlessness. And he's fixed Spock's legs.
Yep. So now we find that Charlie also has the power to undo things.
Yes.
So it's not only a destructive power, but it's also, he can also create things and make good things happen. So. One has to wonder what could have become of him. Could they have molded him into something, less emo, as it were? I didn't want to go there, but I guess in the future the emo kid still exists.
Yeah, I think ultimately the choice they make is the only choice you can make.
Yeah, honestly, they don't really make much of a choice here at the end. It's all resolved for them, but. Atmospheric system. See this guy? He's checking out another oddball looking panel with glass spheres, colored glass spheres sticking out of it.
Yeah, they're basically going to put him in a room with a force field.
And this, by the way, is the first appearance of a brig.
Yeah.
So
Charlie gets very, very mad that he was duped.
And he can't come back out. Oh. Electricity. Yeah, you got a little buzz there. Up.
Oh. Boom.
And Charlie makes the entire wall. What a great shot, though.
Yeah.
That's pretty cool.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for the time. And Spock and Kirk apparently very shocked.
And he froze them.
And he froze the two of them. But he didn't make them disappear.
No.
But he needs them, though, yeah. I think, to make mm-hmm. to get the ship to where it needs to go. They're frozen, but Spock can still blink. Selective freezing.
Mm-hmm. And again, you know, you're really wondering where are they going to go here? This is a very, very sort of effective shot. Oh, he turns his
her into an old lady.
An old lady. And this is great. You see the shadow, the silhouette of the crew people laughing. Charlie thinks they're laughing at him. And then we get a great, great image here of the woman with no face.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
I can only imagine what that felt like to see, you know, on the original broadcast. Yeah.
What can Charlie do? What are the limits of his powers? We might find out here. Mm. We might actually find out.
We're getting a ship-to-ship message that Charlie seems to be blocking.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah, Charlie's giving a little challenge there to Kirk.
Charlie's treating it like a game, almost like chess. Mm-hmm. But Charlie seems to think this is a game that he can't lose.
Well, technically he can't.
Well.
Mm-hmm. As we see here, they're really powerless to do much to stop him. But this is also a motif that's going to reoccur many times, with the Enterprise being taken over by various entities with powers that seem to be insurmountable here. And here's Charlie storming down the hallways. And then they're trying to figure out what they can do to stop him.
Yeah, Kirk's had enough.
Yeah, Kirk doesn't. And now they're saying Kirk's immunity is gone.
Yeah, McCoy says he's off the deep end.
Yeah, you pushed him too far.
Mm-hmm. And then Kirk realizes that Charlie's controlling the ship at the moment. And he realizes that Charlie hasn't sent anybody away since he's taken control of the ship.
Mm-hmm. Notice that strange, that alternate shirt that McCoy's wearing there.
Yeah.
That's not a typical blue shirt.
Yeah. It almost looks like medical scrubs or something, or possibly, what the scrubs might look like in the future.
Hmm. Short sleeve, no less.
Yeah. Well, that's so you can wash your hands, I guess, and keep them unmolested.
Of course. Yeah. So here's Charlie back on the bridge again.
Kind of drunk with power.
Yep, telling him he can make them all go away anytime they want to.
So he sits down in the captain's chair.
You wonder how the people on the Antares ship got rid of him at all.
Yeah. Well, it was probably Charlie knowing that the Enterprise would be sort of a gateway to a more populated area. It seems like Charlie is very keen on getting to Colony 5.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So I think he wants to interact with as many people as he can.
Yeah. Now Kirk is gambling here.
Yeah.
Seeing if Charlie's reached his limit.
Yeah. McCoy and Spock are sort of turning on as much of the ship's resources as they can. Really trying to overload Charlie. And Charlie's going to sort of break down like the 17-year-old kid that he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And Kirk's sort of holding fast here. You know, it's an important lesson. When you call somebody's bluff, you better be ready to take it all the way.
Oh, and he gets physical with Charlie, too. Throws him. And this is a rare low-angle shot of the bridge. You don't really see the bridge from this angle very often. So... That's a plus for this episode. So interesting triangles on the back of the seats there. Mm-hmm. you don't really get to see very closely very often. Mm-hmm. So here's
and Charlie's lost the ship.
Kirk was reeling back to throw a punch too there. Right for the physical.
And Charlie's lucky because I think and Rand's back.
On the bridge too. They didn't put her back where she disappeared from. So she's very informal for the bridge.
Yeah.
But her hair's still up. Mm-hmm. And here we see
some kind of gaseous, some kind of
strange looking
and Charlie knows what it is.
Yep. And now he realizes the jig is up.
Yeah. He'd been living with the Thasians. And now they've come to reclaim him.
And here is another Star Trek first.
The floating head. We're seeing
the first apparition of many in the Star Trek universe. Mm-hmm. The green floating head. We'll see other ones that are similar, but this is a disembodied head.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll see full body apparitions as well. But they use that really cool rippling effect to make it really bizarre and sci-fi. Look, there's another random crewman there.
Yeah.
That left side, that captain's left side of the bridge.
Doesn't get a lot of play.
Nobody really gets to do much over there except for Scotty. Scotty, who doesn't appear in this episode
we haven't seen him yet.
And no Sulu.
Yeah. So basically, Charlie's getting reclaimed here. He's pleading with Kirk to take them. Kirk makes ultimately the right decision. He's basically banishing Charlie to a life, an isolated life with the Thasians. But he just knows that somebody with that power cannot be part of normal human society, unfortunately.
Well, not until he's properly taught by the Thasians how to. You know, he's still young. You got to give. He's still
there's
young.
There's that. All it would take. What would it take to just trigger him real quick? That kind of power. In my opinion, the decision Kirk makes here is the right one. And as sad as it is to see Charlie isolated, he kind of sealed his fate. So as we're wrapping up here, let's talk about whether this is an essential episode or not. As I've said over the course of this episode, I think from a character standpoint, we get a lot of Captain Kirk character moments here. We sort of see his leadership ability as a captain, his interpersonal relationships with the crew, and his overall ability to act as a leader. For that alone, I think this is an essential episode. What's your take?
So this will be a disagreement for me.
Okay.
I don't think this episode is necessary or essential watching. While I do agree that there are a lot of good Kirk moments in this episode, I don't think you get anything about Kirk from this episode that you wouldn't get from about him from other better episodes.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't say from that standpoint that it's an essential episode. You don't get a lot from the other characters either. You do get the Uhura singing, so that's a nice thing. But you do also get that other times as well. So I don't really necessarily feel that this one is required watching or essential watching for anybody. Mm-hmm. It's a good watch. It's a good auxiliary watch. Mm-hmm. I wouldn't necessarily say you should skip it, but in my canon, in my list, I wouldn't put a check mark on this one.
Mm-hmm. And I think ultimately, it'd be hard for us to really say that any episode can be skipped. That we will get to those episodes that seem kind of unbearable, I think. But as far as Trek fan, there goes Charlie. Bye-bye, Charlie. As far as Trek fans go, most Trek fans are going to say, well, it's all essential.
Right, yeah.
But basically, if we're really breaking it down here, and your point is well taken, but I think seeing Kirk make that decision really kind of reinforces that Kirk is able to make those tough decisions. He's able to own them. And this is the first time we see that.
And seeing some emotion here from Janice as well.
It was a little bit of a ride for Janice. And you don't know what she saw when she was gone. She seemed dazed and out of it when she reappeared. almost making you think that maybe she was in some kind of limbo. Mm-hmm. And hopefully that's where she was, because I can only imagine, you know what it would be like to sort of be in non-space. And we also learned that everything on the ship is back to normal. So Tina is no longer an iguana. The old woman turned back to her young version of herself.
But they could not bring back the Antares.
No.
Unfortunately.
That was not
undone.
Those
poor people are gone forever.
Yeah. So we are wrapping up.
There's a shot from the pilot. Cage pilot, by the way, there on the stills. There's a still of Sulu with his rapier.
Yes.
Which is in an upcoming episode.
Yes.
And there's our salt monster. Yep. So we have the typical photo montage. There's a little shot from the man trap there.
Mm-hmm.
The phaser blast.
Yep. And that pretty much brings us to the end of the episode. So,
and look at this. This is a strange one. This is one of the few that does not have Vina, the Orion chick, as the last shot.
Mm-hmm. Desi Lu sends us home. Thank you, as always, or again, for sitting here and watching Charlie X with us. And we will talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening.
No. But if I did what you said, if I was Chattel.
Charlie, there are a million things in this universe you can have, and there are a million things you can't have. It's no fun facing that, but that's the way things are.
Then what am I going to do?
Hang on tight and survive. Everybody does.
You don't.
Everybody, Charlie.